KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
What is up with newbie telling me when we're on and when we're not on the air?
This is what happens when you give them an inch, Alon. You give them an inch and they ask for, what's the next denomination of measure there?
A centimeter? 2 centimeters?
Maybe 2 centimeters.
Mile.
Well, no, see, I was going to work up to the mile.
A foot?
They ask for a foot, yes.
A yard?
And then they take a yard.
A deca-yard? Right.
And then they attempt to take a mile.
So, I heard the music. And I was just worried that no one was going to be on there.
And that's when...
And listen, what if I'm talking about my kitchen
that's
while,
what disaster
we, while
happens.
We go on the air?
It won't happen again.
I can hear the music. I know when this is happening.
No, let's just... We do it just real chill.
You know what he said to me before
let's
you
just,
got
let's
here?
Let's just be real chill. I hate that Aura guy. Does he have to come tonight? Did he
say
that?
I heard you on the GolgaCast last week, and wow, you really brought the energy up. You brought it up a notch or two or 10. Well, what happened to this show? How come you don't bring that energy to this show?
That sounds kind of like a little passive aggression there. You know, like, you brought that other thing's energy up.
And he wants to stick around.
I just want the best from you. That's all I want.
Right. Well, I appreciate you.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed. This is the third show, and already, Colin, you're demanding performance from Alon.
There's
not a lot of people who can do this.
It might be a tough thing to get performance out of me.
Consider it a compliment.
But it's good to at least expect it. So, congratulations. Now, as always, we are here for another fantastic show. I'm going to point out that I personally will not be here next week, so it's up to you guys to decide if you want to be here next week.
Oh, I'll be here.
I'm actually speaking to the listeners, but no, to you two as well.
Yes. Well, the listeners also can decide if they want to be
okay.
here.
Okay. Well, and you guys can run the show next week.
We could have like an extra special episode or something.
I will be either on a plane or on the ground, but either way, I will not be here next Tuesday. So you guys can take care of it. This week, let me talk a little bit about the new game I played on the Nintendo DS.
Was it Rayplay?
It was not Rayplay.
Oh.
It was Picross 3D.
Was it 3D?
It is... Well, it's not 3D like the Nintendo 3DS, 3DS 3D, but it is 3D. Are you familiar with Picross at all?
In fact, I am.
Okay. Are you familiar with Picross?
No, I'm not.
Seriously? Do you have a Nintendo DS?
I do.
All right. Well,
it's kind of like Sudoku, but not really.
Go get Picross.
Right?
All right.
Seriously.
Do you think that's...
It's not like it's going to be expensive or anything.
Worthy evaluation?
Well, here's the thing. You know how people compare any puzzle game to Tetris?
Yes.
That's kind of like how Picross is to Sudoku. Maybe it's a little bit more analogous.
Right. Well, that's where the not really qualification came
People
in.
See Bust a Move,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's like Tetris. I'm like, no. No, it's not at all like Tetris.
No, I for one would scoff at such a comparison. Yeah.
But it is a game that involves solely number crunching, right? But it also creates cute little pictures, and
that's reward. Do math, get picture.
Yeah,
that's.
But it's
that's
not,
the game in four words. We should do more.
It's got some more like reasoning associated with it than or spatial reasoning kind of. I don't know if I want to use the word spatial, but it's. It's got some elements to the number crunching that are different than just Sudoku. It's awesome.
If you love that game, you probably like love programming arrays or something.
Well, now it's true. I don't know if all of our listeners know what that is, but hopefully a lot of them do. So 3D Picross is Picross in 3D.
Oh, you've just destroyed my mind in one instant.
So here's where it goes a little bit bad.
That's insane.
I actually haven't had this issue too much, but with the original Picross, all the squares are pretty small.
Right.
Like not much bigger than the tip of the stylus.
Right.
And
so they can put on like a ton of squares.
Yeah. Well, I'm convinced that my DS Lite is not calibrated properly, and I haven't found a way to recalibrate the sensitivity on it. So, like, you hit towards the bottom of the screen, and it kind of taps somewhere that isn't where you really tapped. So that's a problem. for playing this Picross. So I always use the controller, and I was always way faster with the controller anyway, just the D-pad and the buttons.
Sure, sure.
3D Picross doesn't allow you to do that. Luckily, the graphics that you have to tap are bigger, but also it doesn't give you the chance to screw up and not get penalized for it, right? So it has this counter where, and by the way, I'm just assuming people know what Picross is.
That's fine.
I shouldn't.
Look it up. It's the internet age.
Yeah, I shouldn't, but it would be far more difficult for me to explain. So this goes out to the people who know what I'm talking about. So there are certain times when you have to tap away a block, you know, get rid of it, or other times where you light it up, which is to say you're saving it. You're marking it as, that's definitely a block. So the problem is you hold a button, right? You hold the L trigger or D-pad or some button to indicate that you're in smashing mode, and you smash, which is bad news if your stuff's not calibrated properly. I haven't really had that problem, but there is a time where, like, I hit the button by accident and then I smashed a block. And you can't just say, let me smash a block and recreate it. No, it tells you immediately, oh, you weren't supposed to smash that one, which is a hint. And I'm right. One of those players who doesn't like getting hints.
Right. Well, I guess it's tough luck for
right.
you.
But it definitely adds a dynamic to the game, which I don't want to say is good. I prefer the first one.
Yeah. Well, right? Well, what about the extra dimension dynamic? Does
well, that's
that
weird,
add anything?
Right? Because so in 3D, once you get at least a 3x3,
right.
you have hidden blocks, right? That center block, like that center of the Rubik's Cube, is not visible.
Right.
And so it has the system of removing layers. And so you can look at any layer in 2D.
Right.
So once it gets more complicated than just a little, you know, puzzle, you're essentially looking at it in 2D, just multiple planes of 2D.
Sure. Which is what 3D is. Like,
yes.
By definition, almost.
Well, of course.
Right.
But what's also weird is they only let you pull away layers in two directions, not three, or in two planes rather
yeah.
than three. So there's sometimes you want to look at it, you know, from bottom up, but you can only look at it from the right side or from the left side.
Right.
They probably
decided it was too confusing.
I think it has more to do
freedom.
With controlling the rotation of the object
yeah.
with the stylus.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have some limitations on it, it gets a little bit wild and it's hard to make it seem smooth because you've only got a 2D plane that you're moving the stylus on.
Right.
It has to pretend it knows where you actually want to move this 3D object. And so if it gave you full motion of it,
right.
and like you could just rotate it infinitely, which you can do in that, you know, on one axis, right? You could spin it, but you can't then rotate it vertically forever. It's getting
okay.
a little bit hard to explain.
I'm glad you brought this up, though, because
2D control of 3D objects is funky.
Yes. I want to transmorgify this into a certain angle, and the certain angle that I'm going for necessitates you to explain to me if the extra dimension is better or worse, or how it actually changes the game, aside from the mechanics of just manipulating a third dimension.
Okay. So it makes it a little bit more complex, but not in a way that you're always dealing. Like I said, you usually reduce it to a 2D game anyway. And so in that respect, it simply adds
more
blocks.
It's just more. It's not like you have to do like more complicated things in your head.
Well, it did change one element. So in the original Picross, let's say you have 25 blocks across, right? It's going to tell you, it's going to give you numbers like 1, 2, 5, 2,
right.
6, right? And you know that you're going to have one block separated by some amount of gap, two blocks separated by some amount of gap. It doesn't have that anymore. It only ever gives you one number. But it may give you a number with a secondary indicator saying there's four in this row, but they're in two separate parts. And you don't know how much, if it's a 2 and 2 or if it's a 1 and 3 or a 3 and 1.
Right.
And then in addition, there's another indicator that tells you it's in three parts. But I actually haven't decided yet, because I haven't played through the whole tutorial, if it's in three parts or just more than two. So I'm not quite sure what that indicator means.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's a number with a circle or a square around it.
Sure.
So the point is, if you see like a 3 with a square around it, you know it's got three separate parts, so it's only going to be units of one block. But if you see like a 5 with a square around it, it could be a 2, a 2, and a 1. Or, I'm not sure, it could be a 1, a 1, 1, 1, 1. But it's,
right.
it's probably just 3.
Right.
And they probably limit themselves to that, which also means they limit the creations that you can make, right?
Sure.
By not having enough methods of indication. Yeah, so there you go. And then on a 2D plane, it makes it a little bit easier because you actually have three plane. Well, sometimes they'll give you something which is actually 2D but made of blocks.
Right.
But you have the sides and the tops and the fronts.
Okay, so let me distill this down a little bit. Does this in 3D make it really any better at all? Is it anything
really
better?
What I think it does is it adds a convoluted control scheme for what is exactly the same thing.
Right. So you'd say no.
And difficult to hold when you're in bed, by the way, holding the 3DS above you, having to have the left hand holding it, and then the right hand controlling it.
Yeah. Well, with my, apparently all my fingers are size 12 and above, so it's hard for me to hold the DS even upright.
I think the gameplay is actually reduced to essentially the same thing as the first one.
Yeah.
Except you're making something 3D, so the reward that you referred to earlier, the reward is more interesting.
Well, that's,
although
that can be true.
Lower resolution, at least in the easy level that I'm right now.
Right. So the angle that I wanted to get at with this, you reminded me of a conversation I had earlier in the week with somebody else where we were talking about 2D games and 3D games, right? And this is a guy that I don't really know. So he's like, what do you think of 3D games? And I was like, well, in short, I think they suck. But I have an explanation for that involves a much longer, deeper conversation, right? So then we talked about that, right? And one of the things that we got onto that I think is interesting is that there's... When we were exploring this idea of why does Ara hate 3D, and it's not like I have a hatred of 3D. I'm just being a little coy about it on purpose. There are actually certain things that if you want to make a game in three dimensions of space, there are certain concessions that you have to make on the dynamics of gameplay that are necessarily problematic. In other words, you have more problems that you have to solve and you may or may not have answers for in implementing a game and designing a game that takes place in three dimensions of space versus two.
Can I give one really clear example for our listeners?
Yeah, so one really simple example of this is simply the navigation and visibility of space. When you're in a 2D game, you can theoretically see the entire world if you zoom out far enough, right? In any case, you can see 360 degrees all around you because you're just looking from above, let's say, for example, onto a 2D sheet, and you can see everything around you. In 3D, there's a concept of something being behind you that you can't see without some other means of actually looking
behind you. Well, that's assuming you're
looking
first
behind
person.
You. Okay, well, you have to have a camera. Whether it's third or first person, right? You have to have a camera.
And something could conceivably be behind the camera.
Something could be behind the camera. I mean, you could say, oh, well, what about a 3D game and you have a top view? And if the interaction's happening on a plane, then it's not a 3D game, right? So you have to be very careful about the way that you define what you mean by 2D and 3D. But in general, there's that, and just really quickly, a couple other problems are it's difficult to discern distances when you're looking at a 3D perspective world. So in a game where things like jumping and spatial manipulation is important, these things take longer times for the player to process, and the player in general is more inaccurate in judging them than on pure 2Ds.
I've definitely come across that before. And I've got another example I'll give after the break, which is now. We'll be right back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
Sponsored by the University of Advancing Technology at uat.edu. Where you should go.
Or as I like to call it, UAT.
UAT. No, UAT. That's what everybody calls it.
That's what they say?
UAT. Yeah, so I said...
UAT? UAT?
It used to be UACT, by the way. It changed years ago. I said I was going to give another example of 3D gameplay changing the game, so to speak.
Sure.
This is one thing that was brought up sort of at the dawn of 3D gaming, which... I mean, it's hard to define exactly when it happened, but it was basically PlayStation and Nintendo 64. So Nintendo 64 came out with Mario 64, right? Debuted with that game. And that was a big game changer. I love using that pun on the show. So it was a game that was always 2D, put into complete 3D.
Right.
And at about the same time, you had Crash Bandicoot coming out. And I remember reading an interview, I think with the head of Naughty Dog or something, Jason whatever, talking about Crash Bandicoot.
Jason Rubin.
Sure. And so they were talking about the the move to 3D and the changes it creates for you. And it's so in Super Mario, and we'll just imagine the first Super Mario Brothers.
I can't wait to hear this.
It's very obvious for us, right? But for our listeners, I don't know if they think about this stuff.
So, but I'm hoping you'll say what I think you'll say, because it'll make me giddy.
So the first Super Mario Brothers, you play, and within an instant, you come across an enemy, and you're forced to deal with this enemy.
Right.
You either get hit by it, you jump on its head, you jump beyond it, or you jump on a ledge to evade it.
Right.
Like, somehow...
You run away, maybe.
Sure, you could go left and... fail, but you have to deal with this enemy somehow, right?
Okay.
Whereas in 3D space, you see the Koopa, and you just walk around it, right? There's an infinite number of options of evasion. It's not hard at all. You don't have to deal with it. You can just walk away. Now,
there's definitely more options of evasion, sure. And also, you know, in 2D games, when you have to or you want to have a choke point, which means you want to restrict the player's movement to have to encounter or face a certain thing, it's a lot easier, right? Like, a three-dimensional choke point is like a funnel, right? Or maybe it's like a bridge.
Just a lot of walls.
That you can't jump over or like a wall or it just depends.
Something can be done. Or in the case of Crash Bandicoot, which was sort of different, it's 3D, but it's actually very 2D because it trims it down. Like, you have these rails, so to speak, or slim areas that you're traveling through. So, of course, you can avoid an enemy, but if that enemy moves, you know, just a little bit to the right, then you're suddenly not avoiding him anymore.
And is that,
it
is
was
that
kind
what,
of on tracks.
Is that what he was saying? Is that what the interview was about?
Dude, it was years ago. I was 16,
okay.
So I don't know.
Okay, so let's just assume that that's what it is.
Yeah,
because
it's 15
years ago, it's clear that they deliberately made that choice. And that leads to another interesting thing.
I think the argument, by the way, was whether or not the PlayStation was powerful enough to handle 3D like Mario.
Oh,
and they
I
were
see.
Saying, yes, it could. We didn't restrict the 3D-ness of Crash Bandicoot for technical reasons. We did it for gameplay reasons.
I see.
To not allow you to evade stuff like that.
And it's interesting. It is a technical trade-off, and you can actually see in those two games the technical trade-off, because in Crash Bandicoot, they basically restricted the camera perspective to one view. And you can see that, you know, the textures are much more rich.
Well, they also had CDs.
It looks better, right? But when you're rendering an entire world where the camera could be anywhere, you have to have surfaces everywhere. And so you have to compromise on things like texture resolution. And, yeah, obviously the CD factor was another thing because they could hold more information on the CD. But the other interesting point that I wanted to get at with all this is that I want to mention this because it gets overlooked far too often. And what we're talking about with the 2D and the 3D, with the 3D being more, right? 3D has more stuff. There's just more things you can do, right? There's more options you have of evasion. There's more decisions you need to make in what direction. There's more directions you can go in and so on, right? The interesting thing is, right, and this speaks to exactly what Naughty Dog did with Crash Bandicoot and a lot of other developers did with their games. There's value, and not just value strictly speaking. Like, I want to use an even stronger word. I want to say that it's really important to place limitations and restrictions on what the player can do in a game, because that's when interesting things happen. People seem to generally correlate, you know, more is always better. And that's not true. You lose a lot of interesting kinds of interactions if you say, okay, let's just jump to three dimensions of space versus two in a game space.
Yeah, like the enemy encounter.
Right.
Right. Could change. But of course, it also opens the doors for several other types of things, like different types of enemy encounters, right?
Well, sure. I mean, it's a trade-off, right? But I guess I just want to really harp on this point. You know, there's so much you can get from restrictions in games. That's what makes... Because restrictions essentially are rules, and the rules are what make the game. So giving the player the freedom to just do whatever, I mean, I guess that's its own value in a sense, right? But at the same time, there's, you know, I got to say that, you know, most of all the really, really interesting things I've ever encountered in games is when your actions or something was restricted in a certain way, and that's what made the interaction or that part of the game interesting. So that's my piece about that piece.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we all understand that, though. It kind of forces a narrative to it, right? So to speak, where it can define more of what's going to happen in advance rather than giving you the freedom.
Right.
Which is what Grand Theft Auto 4.
It's more structured. It's more control. That's what it is. It's more. It's a more precisely controlled experience.
Yeah. And Grand Theft Auto is the complete other end of that, right? This open-ended, pretty much what you want.
In a way, yeah.
It still focuses your with the mission structure and everything, but it's got that open-world aspect to it. I still think the mission structure gives it something.
Well, like, so that's not in terms of 3D. They could have restrained it more by saying you have to do these missions or you'll have some sort of negative impact, right?
Right.
Whereas choosing not to do the mission, in rare situations, does it ever matter, right? Usually you can just not do it or not find the person who will give you the mission and just do whatever you want, right? So you have this total sandbox, so to speak. And people do find value in that, but it's, of course, only because the developer put things to do in the game, right? If they took out the cool points and the, for making a long jump or took out any reward from beating people up on the street or took out the scenarios where you could, you know, set a whole building ablaze with just grenades or something like that, right? If they didn't build those free-roaming things into the game to make it interesting, then it would be just a really boring game. And honestly, I still think it's kind of boring.
Or an interesting game without the boring parts.
Yeah. but they put effort into making that freeness interesting. Whereas you might say, let's go back to the Mario era, where you're taking a 2D game saying, okay, make it 3D. If they didn't think real hard about it, it could have just been a 2D game where you could just putz around a lot and it would be boring. But again, they had to build in things to make it interesting, giving you things to do that are outside of the main goal of, you know, said mission right at that time. So, you know, in Mario, you could do this mission, but you also could go get the red coins or something.
Or all the side missions they built in.
Yeah.
The crazy side stuff.
Exactly. And so that happens in these sandbox games. Whereas in a game that's two-dimensional or just a lot more restricted, there's no real need to give you that freedom because, I mean, and it won't work. Because you're too much funneled into playing the game the way that they planned it, so they get to define the story a little bit more, and it, you know, it goes back to that whole narrative versus
right. Right. Well, whatever form that takes, which may or may not be an explicit narrative.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting angle you bring up with like Grand Theft Auto because, right, that was like the de facto free roaming, like you can do whatever you want game. Right. And that came out in the time when nobody really knew what type of game that was. Right.
Yeah. Well, actually did that with the 2D ones as well. So it's not so much a question.
Well,
of 3D.
It did, but nobody really noticed it until number 3 came out. Right. It
took a couple versions.
But the funny part about that is that everybody always I think that maybe it was like a marketing pitch that maybe just had I don't know, too much power to it. It was kind of like a ShamWow thing where everyone was sold this bill of goods. Oh, you can do anything you wanted, right? Like the ShamWow.
You can be a hooker.
Like the ShamWow, right? And then, okay, now maybe for some people the ShamWow is great and you can run around and, you know, just beat up random thugs and, you know, jump off a few buildings and scale some other things, and that's fine, right? But I think a lot more other people realized, you know what? If I have an unrestrained world with no direction to go in, that's problematic in the same way that the ShamWow is not covering, soaking up enough of my liquids.
Oh. Is that where this is coming from?
So it's a little bit of the ShamWow.
Deeply rooted anger towards the ShamWow. Well, we'll be back with ShamWows right after this.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
All right, we're only halfway through the program. I think maybe it's time to announce that this is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And I'm Colin.
And that's Colin, otherwise known as Newbie, Make-a-lon, get on the mic, McGann.
Yeah.
McGinn.
Mick.
He'll be thoroughly flogged for this infraction.
All right. Are you going to E3, by the way? Have you made that decision?
I made my paperwork and everything. I was just going to talk to you, actually, about getting that letter of awesome.
Yeah. I made that letter. Did you do the
card is done. I photoshopped it.
All right.
All day.
Did you actually submit the thing to them online?
I thought I needed the letter to make the submission.
No, but you have to register online, and then you give them the materials later. I mean,
I thought it was all online.
Well, it is, but like, so you do your submission, they're like, make sure that you email us your credentials.
Ooh.
So you should register online as well.
I'm on it.
Right away. I tried to text you that night. No response.
I got the text.
Okay.
Alon waits for no man.
That's cool. I haven't submitted my credentials either, but you can give it to him on site. I may actually go, by the way. Woohoo. Ooh. Anyway, chatterboxgameshow.com is our website. Alon at, Ara at, maybe even Colin at. Did I make you?
You made me one, yeah.
I did? Okay. An email address, Colin at, or we'll just get, I'll get you a new email address, the Mick. All right. Or which would be the MC as well, which, you know, good for you. All right, you have something that you want to talk about. It involves bigness and hardness.
So that's a very unique way to put it.
Okay. That's all I know about it so far.
So we've been – I thought this would be a nice segue that we didn't really segue into, but it doesn't matter because this is really close to what we're talking about already.
Keep in mind, I still haven't talked about the Nintendo DS, 3DS.
That's fine.
Okay.
I mean
– we don't have to. Maybe it's overdone.
We can get to that too. There's all kinds of time.
Not really.
Not really, but we'll pretend there is. Okay. So GamePro.com published a editorial by John Davison. And
I was going to say, they sure didn't publish a magazine. Oh!
So the gist of this, which is related to what we were just talking about, is that games in general are too big, one, and two, too hard. And the funny thing about this is that so John's his angle with this subject is that, you know, lots of companies take lots of metrics about how people play their games, how far they get, and so on, and the one thing that seems to be really, really universal is that hardly anybody actually plays games by and large to completion. In fact,
I found this surprising, by the way. You're actually saying that when you're playing a game that's online, it's sending usage statistics back to Mother Base.
Yeah, and a lot of them do that. I can't tell you which ones exactly do and don't because you can't tell.
On Gears 2, they just track the achievements of who got all the achievements for finishing the game.
Yeah, but I can tell you that I know firsthand without being specific that companies do track even more precise information than what achievements you got. About your behavior online and maybe even offline.
Which is weird because they're wasting bandwidth sending this data. But, I mean, one example that people know about is Halo 2, at least, or Halo 3, whatever, where, like, you could go on to Bungie.net and, like, look at where all your shots came from and where you died. And so they could see, basically, you could end up with a heat map of the map, right? Where do people spend all their time and that sort of thing.
Right.
But it's more than that. It's like, what path did you take? How much time did you spend playing the game?
Yeah,
like, all that stuff I'm sure is being logged and sent
out. The great thing is that they can collect all kinds of crazy info if they want to. Yeah. And anyway, the long and the short of it is that, by and large, most everybody seems to believe that, let's say, about 90% of the people who buy a game only play it for four or five hours. And while at the same time, right, a lot of games are, well, you know, upwards of 10, 20, and maybe even 100 hours, depending on the game, right? So the funny thing is that, you know, I'm trying to... He also talks about this concept of... I'm not sure if I can say this on the air, Alon. Can I say that on the air?
I don't know what you're referring to, so
okay.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's say messing around, right? But with a D.
Okay.
Okay. And
I think you can.
Yeah.
I think you can. I would go for Norm's not paying attention anyway.
I can say dicking around?
Yes.
Okay. So his observation and also his I guess, you know, from talking to people is that, you know, from developers and various places that actually, you know, collect this information, is that most people who play games, and actually I've said this in a different form many times, are not actually interested in necessarily playing the game per se, or even playing a game, whether it's the particular game that you think you're playing or not. Most people just want to, as John Davins says, dick around, right? And my version of that is, you know, most people are just interested in experiencing some kind of generalized entertainment, and they don't care about really as much whether it's the game or a game or what the rules are or anything like that.
So here's what's weird, though.
They just want to see things blow up and be entertained.
But I don't believe that. Like, except in the case of a Grand Theft Auto or some other free-roaming game, I don't believe that they just want to dick around. I think of a Mario game, it's like, there's missions. There's
right.
things you
well,
got to do.
So that's, I think that this piece of writing does seem to ignore a huge population that, as you settle on, is interested in actually playing the game. But I also think that there is also a gigantic population that just wants to dick around. And I can't tell you how big each one is. But
I don't think
his
dicking around argument applies when you think of like progression. I think a lot of people just want to get that progression, that next level up. Like looking at Farmville and how many, there's no real gameplay in that, but people just like to click the buttons and make something happen and
right,
see their
right.
levels go up too.
But think about any game. So like Castlevania, right? Any of the Castlevania.
Right. But if you're playing the game for more than about 4 or 5 hours, then clearly you're interested in playing the game. But I would posit...
What does dicking around mean, though? It means they just want to play the first three levels?
This is what I think.
Or that they just don't want to even go through the
level?
Well,
my interpretation is that they don't necessarily care about the goals or the rules set forth in the game per se. They just want to be amused by something for 10, 20 minutes at a time. And
I would argue that's the only mission of a game.
Well, no. This is very different from, for example, you don't just dick around when you play chess. I mean, you do if you're really smart, but most people have to use. You don't just move pieces around just to see what happens. I mean, most people make decisions about them, right? When people play games, people, I don't believe, by and large, approach a video game in the way that somebody who knows how to play chess would approach playing chess, which incidentally is the same way that I think most, quote, hardcore gamers approach games, is they approach it as chess, whereas I think most people just approach it as, oh, this is something I can interact with. I want to be stimulated for a period of time, and I don't care about anything else.
I'm having a real hard time speaking vaguely about this.
Right. Now,
like, I need examples.
Well, there's two big, vague groups, right? And without getting into the nitty-gritty of how big each one is and how many people there are, I'm not sure that the solution, which I think is what John Davison is putting forth here, is to make games smaller and easier, necessarily. Because I think that just by its very nature, and just by the very nature of the general populace, there's always going to be a huge group of people that aren't really interested in the outcome of the game and just want to be distracted for 10 minutes. Maybe that's the better way to put it. I think a lot of people are just seeking a distraction, not necessarily into the game for the purpose of playing the game per se. Does that clear it up any for you?
It does, but I have a hard time believing it. I mean, he's got more stats than I do. I don't have any stats except what I see, but I mean, people play a game to be distracted whether or not they're playing it all the way through. I mean, that's their goal. Is to have something fun to do.
Right,
so,
but I'm drawing the distinction from just distraction to not just distraction. You actually have a goal that you want to pursue. And those are two very, very different activities.
What's an example of someone having a goal? Like, I want to finish the game?
Yeah, or like, you know what? Like, level two in the game presents this to me. I want to see if I can beat level two.
What about
that's
like
having a goal?
Or I want to complete the story, or I want to get that next piece of armor, that next piece, that next level up.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you
so,
don't always know what's happening next, but I just say, my goal is to keep going through this game.
Okay,
go from
level sometimes
eight
you
to level
don't,
nine.
But for the purpose of discussion, let's say, oh, I played level two a couple times, right? It's really hard. It beat me. I want to play it now and for the purposes of actually beating level two. So I'm going to concentrate my tactics on beating whatever level two means in this game. Right? This, I think, is a very different pursuit than just saying, I'm bored. I want to see stuff blow up. I'm just going to put in this game because it has a lot of explosions that, you know, I can make happen real quick.
Okay.
Which people do. Maybe you don't believe that people actually play games for that.
I can see that. And for some reason, Rogue Squadron is entering my brain when I think about that.
I don't know, dude.
Maybe it's because I didn't know what to do in that game. I just flew around and blew stuff up.
But that is the reason why I think Grand Theft Auto number 3 was the explosion blockbuster that it was. Because for the first time, I think, in games, people were able to satisfy the sheer, I don't want to be challenged. I don't want something difficult in my face. I don't want a structure. I just want to dick around for 10 minutes.
Well, it did that.
Yep.
It had that in spades. Colin?
Yes.
What do you think of spades?
I like them.
Okay. Good times. I may have been referring to the game Spades, but...
I never even played it.
Or maybe a euphemism for something
else.
And
another game called Hearts.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back. A little more.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
Colin, who's our sponsor?
UAT, the University of Advancing Technology.
Like a white knight.
Yes.
Yes.
That was the correct answer.
They do good things for us. UAT.edu, go to their website, learn about what they offer, the programs, the education that you can get, all the wonderful things. Hackers, they're everywhere.
They're right across from the Fry's Electronics, too. So you can go there and buy stuff and then bring it in and then make your evil devices.
Exactly. Oh, and evil devices are made, let me tell you. So we've got one segment remaining. I had a request through Facebook, of all places, from our good friend Joe, who called in last week, to talk about how the Wii was actually made on the Wii controls were actually made on the Dreamcast years earlier. But I know
what?
I've seen this story.
What?
Some guy used the Dreamcast as the system of choice for building. He's a Midway guy, right? And Ready to Rumble's a Midway game.
But it's not the Wii controls. It was motion controls that were us claimed to be the forerunner of the Wii.
Yeah, but I know I've seen that before. And I don't know if I saw it years ago or somewhat recently, whatever. I don't care that much about it. I'm getting kind of bored discussing, somebody had this and they're suing this person. Like, there's a lot of lawsuits going around the world now. And I don't feel the need to spend time on it. Like, it's sort of interesting. For those who didn't know, somebody made motion controls for a game years ago. Woohoo! Like in 2000. But I'm pretty sure there were motion controls even before that. They just weren't applied to a game console. They were applied to, like, a mouse or something.
Yeah. The landscape of litigation is rather...
It's dense.
Yeah. It's weird. It's really, like, any more words is going to launch us into a discussion we don't want to get into. So.
Exactly. Kind of like the Rayplay discussion that I don't want to get into. Colin.
Yes.
You had a couple things you brought in.
Yeah. So, I was talking about the Humble Indie Bundle last time.
You did. And I got a couple people Twittering me or just Twittering it. Like, one person specifically said, hey, thanks for mentioning the Humble Indie Game Bundle. I actually bought it for the third time. It might have been Shifter, whose email I was just reading.
For the third time?
Not the Hundle. It was the third time he bought World of Goo.
World of Goo's awesome.
He didn't know about the Humble Indie Game Bundle, but it came with World of Goo that he'd already bought because he bought it a second time, probably when they were Name Your Own Price or something. I don't know.
So to be honest, I bought it for Gish and World of Goo, and I was going through some other games. And you guys ever heard of Lugaro HD?
No.
It's crazy. You're a bunny. You jump around. You can attack people. You get a sword. And okay. I just thought it was an insanely weird game. That's the only reason I brought it up. But what I really wanted to talk about was how the Humble Indie Bundle has been getting pirated a lot, even though you can pay whatever you want. And so this guy, Jeffrey Rosen, the guy who's the co-founder of Wolfire Games, the person who's putting on this, he said that some of the reasons were probably that people didn't want to fill out a form or they were in areas that didn't support PayPal or Google Checkout or any of the options that they had. But I kind of wanted to open it up to why do you think people pirate games, if there's anything interesting in there to talk about?
I think that...
Have you not been listening to the show
for the last 4 years?
It was probably
for none of the reasons that Mr. What's-His-Name said.
Rosen.
Yeah. I mean, those are all valid reasons why I think somebody would decide to pirate the game. But I think that this example, over everything else, is a fantastic example of why, pirators, they don't buy things. They just download things.
Yeah.
That's really all there is to it. And obviously, if they're going to give away a game for pay what you want, even 1 cent, of course you're not going to go through whatever means.
It was only one form, though. Like, legitimately one form.
Honestly, barriers to entry, like having to take an action, regardless of what it is a remarkably large barrier for anybody. And this isn't just games. It's not just computers. It's, you know, if you need to do this thing, like get a form signed, and you have to go to a certain building to get that done, you may very well put it off for weeks and weeks and weeks until you absolutely have to do it, right? And the barrier in this case is, I'm already on some torrenting site. All I have to do is click this button, it adds it to my torrenter, and then it's on my computer. Mm. Whereas otherwise, I would have to figure out what this thing is, first of all, because I've never heard of it, but all I see is comments on this torrent site saying it's good. I'd have to go to the site, I'd have to fill out the form, I'd have to actually transact, which means I'd have to have a PayPal account, which, you know, a lot of these pirators, who knows, right? They could be in countries where they just don't do it. I don't know. So there's all these barriers that seem very small for someone who is used to buying games, going through that process, seeking it out, right? But these are probably just people on a site looking at a million games to download for the torrents, and they're like, oh, I'll just grab that, I'll grab this, I'll grab this. Who cares? You know, they don't even know that it was only $1 to buy or something. They just have a 5-game pack, I'll take this, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a question of convenience, even though it's not terribly inconvenient in the grand scheme. One button click is a lot easier than having to figure out what this is all about.
And that's why I don't think that the number of times that something's been pirated, if you can track that, is any legitimate measure of lost sales, because these people wouldn't be buying your stuff anyway. If they couldn't get your stuff as something free online, that someone's pirating via torrent or what have you, they're going to go do something else. And then if they're not going to do anything, if there's no torrents, if torrents magically disappeared, if there's no way for them to pirate anything, guess what? They wouldn't start buying games either.
Yeah. And that's slightly less true for a AAA title that everyone's aware of, like the next Grand Theft comes out or the next Mario or whatever. Like, anybody who knows what that game is probably knows that it comes out, especially just because of the huge marketing push behind it. But even so, that doesn't mean they would have bought it if they couldn't pirate it. It just means that it was simple for them to grab it. And who knows? Maybe I bet people pirate these games and then don't even play them. They just download them, so it counts as a pirated copy or something.
Well, did you guys hear the stat where, like, the people who pirate the most music are also the biggest buyers of music, too?
I think I have heard that.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, well, I don't know the website offhand right now, but I know I've heard that before.
Is that, like, the three people or, like, just in general?
That's just in general.
I think it's considered a larger stat where, if you're buying a lot of music, you're probably also pirating a huger amount of music, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I have the friends who have the hard drive that they pass around, and they have 120 gigs or 300 gigs of music, right?
I can see that.
But they
that.
Still buy tons of
it. I can
music.
See that, but I don't see that transferring over to games. I think the medium is too different.
I agree, actually, because I can't just take my hard drive to your house and then you put it all on there and use it easily.
Because the thing with music is that, one, right, you can audition music maybe not in the same way that you audition a game, right?
And do you mean like that in terms of performance, like going to see a show or something like
no,
that?
No,
or?
Like audition, I mean just like listening to it, right? Like I can download
like
this and listen to it, and I'm listening to the crappy 128K version, which people can tell it's compressed, people who care about audio. And I can listen to that and say, oh, this song sucks, I'm not going to go buy it. Or I really like this song, now I want to support this artist. And I go buy the actual, you know, CD version, which is much higher quality.
Yeah. But also, music is it's a media type, you know, whether it's an MP3 or an OGG or whatever it is you're downloading, right? Same with pictures and video. It's played by something else, whereas a game, you know, has to have compatibilities.
Right.
You have to take the steps to install.
Well, there's that stuff too. But I do think that there are some people who do audition games by pirating them. By audition, I mean trying them out as like a demo, right?
Yeah.
But
that's probably a very small percentage.
But I think it's less than the people who do it to music. And also, it's like, I don't know, for some reason or another, it seems easier, and maybe you guys can tell me why, because I can't figure it out off the top of my head. It seems easier if you just pirate a game and you just say, I just want to try it. And then you're like, well, I just have it. I'm just going to keep playing.
Yeah.
You know, or well, like with music, like you have it, but there seems to be more of an incentive. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not to really. Just, to buy I'm the not picking up what thing. You're putting down there.
I don't know why.
People pirate music. They can just, oh, now I've got it and play it. I don't know why you think there's an extra incentive to buy it.
Well, I'm positing this as an explanation for why there's so many people to buy for music. More people pirate who
well
and buy
I
games.
Mean, it's still
and I don't
a percentage,
think it applies.
Right? So I don't listen to a lot of music in general. So I've bought stuff and I've not bought stuff. But you know, if you're looking at raw numbers, it's probably not the people who buy the most music have a higher percentage of music they have that they purchased. It's quite possibly a smaller percentage because they pirate so much. But, you know, certainly they're the ones spending the dollars. So if you're just quantifying this by dollars spent, yeah, I've spent $100, but I've downloaded $1 million worth of music. I'm speaking hypothetically here. Whereas, you know, maybe I spent $10 on music and stole only $100 worth, right? So I'm at a 10% bracket instead of a, you know, 0.1% or whatever my numbers equated to. So
it also has to do with like the audience of game players too. Like these people who are playing video games on the PC are obviously more technically competent than like your average person, you know. So they'll be more likely.
Yeah, playing a game on a PC is such a pain in the ass. That's why we don't do that here.
Oh my God, we're already done.
Yeah, you don't play games on the PC, do you, Colin?
I play a couple. I bought the Humble Indie Bundle, didn't I?
Yeah, for your little Mac.
I've got a PC at home.
There's no installation on Mac. Stuff just
don't,
all right. It just
don't get
works.
On the defensive when Alon
it just works.
Well, the humble indie bundles will be going on for sale. They extended the sale for 2 more days. They added another game to it too, Samroast 2. So go buy that.
Wait, so what happened if you bought it before Samroast?
They actually emailed me a Sweet. Link to go buy it. Yeah.
Wait. To go download it. And then, but if you want to give us more money because of this extra game, was it like that?
No, it was just like, hey, there's another person who wants to give away this game. It's yours. And then they open sourced like 3 of them.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Thanks for that, I guess. Next week, these guys will be here. I won't. I'll be back the week after that, barring any sort of huge accident in the air or maybe when the air hits the ground. I should be fine, though. So, everybody, email us your questions, your comments, things you want to chat about, and we'll be back.
Very good.
Bye.
Good night, guys. Bye.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.